Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to a very odd episode of Sour Graps. Because it's not sour graps. It's sweet graps. I'm your host, Alex Pawlowski, and not everything sucks. This is really weird, guys. Like, don't get me wrong. Some things last night sucked. But most things didn't suck. And the things that didn't suck, they like had such an absence of suck that the stuff that did suck, like I barely even remember it sucking. But the stuff that didn't suck, my God, that stuff did not suck. Wow, that stuff didn't suck. I'm so amazed at the amount, the proportions of things that didn't suck. Like just a giant amount, and then like things like right over here, that's a tiny little bit of things that sucked. Or the things that sucked, they sucked. You know, they sucked. But the things that didn't suck, my God, there was a whole new realms of non-suckitude. Yeah, SmackDown was pretty good. I don't know where to go from here, guys. I anticipate them fucking it up because they always do, and I'm probably putting way too much stock in a possible future for the main angle on SmackDown that they're not actually going to do because they have no balls. They don't have the grapefruits to go through with it, but they absolutely fucking should. So we'll talk about that when we get there and other stuff. Hey, Payback, it's been a long time. Does it upset you that I never actually watched the SmackDown matches from Payback, except for, you know, the Roman crowning? Didn't watch Riddle and Corbin because why would you subject yourself to that if you didn't have to? And I didn't watch Sheamus and Big E because part of me knew all along that it wasn't going to be the end of their feud. And even if Big E won, they'd let Sheamus get his heat back immediately. And guess what fucking happened? What else? Was that it? I mean, the SmackDown tag titles, we already talked about them. You know, because it was Shayna and Nia were supposed to are on Raw, but they were on SmackDown. And yeah. But that's it, right? Nothing else from SmackDown on Payback. So, I mean, I didn't catch anything of it in this episode of SmackDown, but on Payback, I do know this. I did see this. Corbin is tweeting about Matt Riddle's alleged rape as though it were a tasteless infidelity. Now that's Riddle and his wife's position, but because they didn't actually do a real investigation, we'll never know. So it's always going to be in my book Matt Riddle's alleged rape, because he can deny it in a way that all he wants, but I don't feel like they're actually really looking into it, since they have a whole history and also a whole currently of not looking into shit like that. So yeah. Anyway, I happen to be all out of lemonade, the official beverage of Sour Graps. I don't think I would need it, though, because it gives me the sour power. So instead, I have a can here in my Milwaukee Miller Park. You know, this happens all the time. I don't know why I'm going to go into this. Miller Park is, of course, named after Miller Brewing Company. Makes Miller Lite and stuff like that. But they're an actual Milwaukee homegrown company. Like, they were started in Milwaukee. They're a Milwaukee brewery. So the Milwaukee Brewers playing in a place like Miller Park makes sense. When we got the sponsorship of Miller Park when it was built in like 2000, that makes sense. And everyone kind of, it feels like it's the last real properly named stadium in baseball. But Miller decided not to renew the rights. So it went to American Family Insurance. So next year, the Brewers will be playing at American Family Insurance Field, which doesn't sound nearly as good or as snappy as Miller Park. Anyway, it's a koozie, Miller Park koozie, and inside is a can of generic store brand cream soda, the sweetest soda you can get in generic form. That is rife with chemicals. They put so many chemicals in that thing to make me, like my taste buds, think that that is root beer with melted ice cream in it. My taste buds are so confused right now because of all the deadly chemicals in this can. But it tastes so good, you guys, so sweet. So that's why I'm going to be drinking it, because tonight, as we discussed, is an episode of Sweet Graps. Let's get to the graps. It starts out with Roman and Paul coming down. Now, the thing of payback was Roman didn't sign the contract until 10 minutes into the match, which I feel like if they start the match without you, if they go 10 minutes in a one-on-one match and then you're like, all right, well, now I want to get in there, I don't feel like that should be strictly allowed. You know what I mean? I mean, more power to them if that's actually the way you can do it. If you can get that done and you can do that yourself, I mean, if those are the rules and you can play by the rules, good for you. Seems like cheating, though, which is good because he's a heel now and that makes me happy. But, yeah, he waited until The Fiend and Strowman had beaten the shit out of each other for 10 minutes. And then he comes out with Paul with the contract, signs it, tosses the pen, and carries a chair to the ring and proceeds to wail on these two men for a while. He winds up getting into the mandible claw for a bit, but kicks a... Oh, this is after The Fiend does the superplex to Strowman and the ring breaks. And I feel like the ring was really poorly enforced. Because the last time they did one of those, which wasn't that long ago, really, you can do this like once every decade, and then it becomes like, nah, I've seen it. It's been done. The reason why it worked so well the last time they did it with Strowman and Big Show is because it was Strowman and Big Show. And it's like 900 pounds of just man meat slamming in the middle of the ring. I could see how that would work. But The Fiend doesn't weigh the same as the same amount of as Big Show. Just doesn't. I know Big Show's lost a lot of weight. By the way, RIP the Big Show show. So sad I won't have to review season two of that. Actually, I never got around to reviewing season one of it because the first two episodes of season one were the worst thing I've ever put in my eyeballs. Sorry about that, Mr. Show. Not Mr. Show. That was a great show, Mr. Show. With Bob and David. The ring breaking thing doesn't work anymore as a spot if you're going to do it like once every year and a half. But anyway, that they did that. Then Roman comes out and he winds up pinning Strowman to win it after a spear. So now we got heel Roman is the champion. So he comes out on SmackDown with Heyman, and Heyman is there. Heyman is just Heyman has the stink face. I'm angry. I'm Paul Heyman. I'm so angry at everybody. Paul Heyman's monologue is good. He's great at delivering these things, and they're always impeccably written. But one thing that doesn't ring true is, like, where was all the adulation for this man? What kind of thanks did he get? Who likes this? Like, well, the fans, yeah, the internet kids, me. We never liked, you know, the way he was shoved down our throats. Incidentally, his tweet about how the only reason I'm shoved down your throat is because you keep your mouth open. It's a good tweet. It's a good comeback. I don't know if it holds up to, like, scrutiny on the logic there. But yeah, sure. I thought this was all good except for that part. Like Heyman saying, "Why doesn't anybody love this man? Nobody gives him any thanks. What kind of gratitude does he receive? Nobody treats him nice enough." And I'm like, well, there's the whole Vince McMahon building his entire company around this guy and never letting go until now on the whole heel thing. Maybe that could be something. But he did say that just when I thought I was out, this man pulled me back in. I was gone. I was out. You know, he doesn't say I was fired. But that's what he's alluding to. And he says, this guy, I was cast adrift in the shark-filled ocean of obscurity or whatever. And he pulled me up onto the island of relevancy. Which is all fancy words, but the way he delivers it is all good. I thought this was all fine, but he did say that you know, because they had a triple threat to decide the challenger for Night of Champions, Night of Champions, Clash of Champions, Clyde of Champions, Nash of Champions. They had a triple threat to figure out who's going to challenge Drew McIntyre at Nash of Champions. So everything's got to be bigger and better when it's Roman's title on the line. By the way, Roman's standing there with the belt on his shoulder. He's not bouncing around like Lesnar, but it's basically a Lesnar impersonation. He doesn't laugh at any of Paul Heyman's jokes. But he says that we're going to have a Fatal 4-Way tonight. I'm not even going to tell you who's in it because they don't deserve to have their name on my lips or on the lips of Roman Reigns, because Roman Reigns and I'm gonna leave it to Anderson Cooper and Carmella's latest boyfriend. And my favorite thing about all of this is the camera's on Paul Heyman as he says this, and Paul Heyman points to where the commentary desk is, and right after Heyman points, the cameraman goes like, yeah, I thought that was funny. Oh God, he's talking about you, Corey. Anyway, what the hell happened to Carmella? Is she okay? I don't know what's going on with Carmella. They leave, but not before the big dog speaks. He says Heyman says, "My name is Paul Heyman, and I serve as the special counsel, not the advocate, to the tribal chief of the island, of what they call the island, I forget, but this is my island, and I am the tribal chief." And that is kind of wonky. But I like it so much better than the big dog. Can we never call him the big dog ever again? And now he's the tribal chief. I'm fine with that. You want to lean into the whole Samoan thing? I'm fine with that. Do it. Let's do it. Oh, so sweet. But then Reigns gets on the mic. And he says, "I'm a man of my word. I did exactly what I said I would do as a payback. I signed the contract. I wrecked the Fiend, I wrecked the Monster, and I left." I don't care who I face at Clash National Champions. I don't care who I face at National Champions. Line them all up and feed them to me. When I have this kind of power, all I got to do is show up and win. And that's his new shirt. Because he's got two new shirts now. Wreck everyone and leave and show up and win. I like they're leaning into what we thought. Reigns wins, LOL. Well, it's a foregone conclusion. Roman's going to win this one. He's like, yeah, all I got to do is show up and win. I like that they're kind of leaning into that. That's good. Believe that, he says. We get, is this an actual number one contenders match? Is that really what it is? Wow. So, it doesn't actually start yet. They did this weird thing in SmackDown. Well, they like did everything except for start the match. Then they go to commercial. Then they come back and they do like segments of things happening backstage. And then they go to the ring to start the match that almost started like 12 minutes ago. I don't like that. It's disjointed. Maybe I'll get used to it. It felt weird, especially at the end, the final match. Like they started doing introductions for the final match like halfway through hour two, and the match lasted like 12 minutes. So Roman Reigns is walking around backstage with Paul Heyman, and then Jey Uso is there, and hey, how's it going, Uso? It's going well with me, Oos. How is it going with you, Oos? Oh, Oos, you know, still pretty good. But I've been trying to get in touch with you all week, and you haven't returned any of my texts or phone calls or whatever. And Heyman doesn't like this, and Reigns like, no, it's okay, it's fine. Heyman leaves, and say, like, hey man, what's up with you and Paul? Considering all the shit that he put you through with Brock Lesnar, it's weird that you're like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Let me handle it. Jay's like, hey, if you need anybody, watch your back. I mean, I'm here. It's cool. I don't need anybody. I'm good. But if you need me, just give me a holler. So Reigns leaves. And Jay's like, hey, well, you want to get a steak after the show or something? No? Cool. And so that's that. We'll figure more about that later. I didn't realize this was actually for this because I thought I heard them say, maybe I'm reading the wrong notes. It's Miz and Morrison versus Heavy Machinery. And it is actually for the number one contendership to Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura. I thought they were saying, oh, well, if Heavy Machinery win this match, they could be in line for a title shot, which is what they say during every fucking tag team match. But I thought that was the case. Anyway, Otis comes out with the briefcase and the lunchbox because they got to sell lunchboxes. It's on the fucking website. You can buy a goddamn Money in the Bank lunchbox. Not the little soft one they used to sell years ago that looks like an actual briefcase. This looks like a lunchbox, like an old timey, like take to construction site lunchbox. It's metal. There's a little latch on it. It's like, it looks like a bread, you know, thingy. And you open it up. There's like a Money in the Bank on it. It's green. But he brings both those things out and sets them on the apron. And they have their match with Miz and Morrison. It's a match. But the best part about it is that, Otis does the caterpillar at the end, which sucks, but it's not his finisher anymore, apparently, maybe, hopefully. And that doesn't suck. He does the caterpillar, hits the elbow drop, and then he goes up immediately and hits a Vader bomb. Getting some good height on that Vader bomb, too. on Miz to win. Vader bomb is a great finish for him. It feels like it's got some more oomph to it, mostly because Vader did it, and Vader was never a comedy fat guy. He was a fat guy, but not a comedy fat guy. Like, I don't know if Otis has it in him to be the Vader type, but he has the strength to be Vader if they would book him that way. Tucker and Otis are standing tall in the ring, but Morrison grabs the Money in the Bank briefcase and runs away with it. And so I'll just do this later. Later, Tucker's like, I was looking everywhere. I can't find Miz and Morrison, man. I'm so sorry. And Otis is like, it's all right, Tucky. What do you mean it's all right? They've got the Money in the Bank briefcase. They got your contracts. Like, I don't keep the contract in the briefcase. And he brings up the lunchbox and he opens up the lunchbox. I keep it in the lunchbox. And they say, oh, wait, says Tucker. In this brilliantly scripted little comedy skit. Wait a minute. If the contract is in the lunchbox, then what's in the briefcase? What's in the briefcase is the question Tucky asks. And Otis responds, oh, yeah. Which I thought meant, oh, yeah. Because it sounds kind of like he's saying, oh, yeah. But, I mean, he's saying, hi. But I guess I assumed that meant, oh, yeah. That wasn't a yes or no question, Otis. Old big dozer there. Nope. You can't ask somebody what's in the lunchbox and you say yes. That doesn't make any sense. But anyway, they cut to Morrison, who thinks he's got the contract, but he opens it up and there's Otis's lunch. And he looks at the samurai. I was about to say samurai. The sandwich. And Miz is like, don't. Morrison was almost about to take a bite of that sandwich. I really wish Miz hadn't told him not to. Which meant he would have had to do it. Take the bite of the sandwich. So, remember when I said that Otis was going to actually carry the contract around in the lunchbox? He's not caught. Last week, I said, Otis isn't carrying the contract around, the actual contract, in the lunchbox yet. Just wait for it. We only had to wait 1 week before your boy was proven right again. Sometimes, often, I hate it when I'm right. So, Big E's backstage with Drew Gulak and the Lucha House Party. He's got a birthday cake. Xavier Woods is coming back to co-host Talking Smack for the first time. By the way, did you see what happened with that? They announced that Xavier Woods was going to be the new host of Talking Smack. Xavier Woods found out about it when they announced it on SmackDown. Nobody told Xavier. So they had to get The Miz to get to guest co-host the first two episodes because Xavier couldn't be in Florida by then. Because nobody had told him, you got to be here. He found out about it when he was watching the show along with us. Gotta love this fucking company, man. Anyway, it's Xavier Woods' birthday last night. So Big E prepared a cake for him. The security guard shows up. And the security guard, he's just a big dude. They have I'm so used to seeing these reedy, thin guys on Raw. Am I going to talk about this now or later? I'll talk about it later. Remind me. I know it's not possible for anybody watching to remind me, but I'll remind myself. By saying this out loud, I'm reminding myself. Big security guard's like, hey, I just wanted to let you know I've been told Xavier Woods just got here. So Big E takes the cake, and Big E takes the cake. He does. He really does. He takes the cake when it comes to, guys, I want to see be world champion one day. He takes the cake. But he grabs the cake and leaves with the cake. And he follows the security guy through a door into the parking garage. And the guy kind of like lets him in there, but then shuts the door behind him. And he turns the corner, and there's Sheamus beating him up, knocking the cake to the floor. Brogue kicking him into a door, like one of those big rolly garage doors. And then Sheamus pulls him up onto the hood of a car and does the white noise air raid crash thing onto the windshield. And this is really too bad because Big E was supposed to be one of the four guys in this match to see who faces Roman Reigns at Clash of Champions. It was going to be Big E, Matt Riddle, King Corbin, and Sheamus. So Sheamus apparently is so pissed about how Big E beat him clean at Payback that he wants to continue the feud, and he's allowed to by virtue of attacking Big E backstage. You'll remember that Sheamus is the same guy who assaulted Jeff Hardy, stole Jeff Hardy's rental car, used the stolen rental car that he got by assaulting Jeff Hardy. So those are two felonies right there. Then he uses it to try to run over Elias. He didn't know he wasn't going to kill Elias. He tried to kill Elias. By the way, where's Elias? Is he still in the local medical facility? And then he left the scene of an accident. I don't know if that's a felony or not, but got three felonies and a misdemeanor at least. Then he tried to blame the whole thing, pin the whole thing, frame Jeff Hardy for it. That's four felonies and a misdemeanor. He hasn't been arrested for them yet. Now, outside of a ring, not actually, it's not a sanctioned thing at all. He ambushes Big E backstage in the parking garage and tries to kill him by doing a giant special move to him on the windshield of a car. Is Sheamus like friends with the DA in Orlando? Why will you not press charges? You know who this man is. He's doing all of this on TV. Arrest this man. Mostly so I don't have to watch him wrestle anymore. It's weird too. Like he's got wrestling gear. These little trunks, his boots, his bracers, his gauntlets. But then when he's walking around backstage, he looks like Brad Pitt from Snatch. Did somebody show Vince a 20-year-old movie again? And he thinks it's modern. It's like, oh, wow, all the kids are wearing this now. Brad Pitt, that hot young actor who is in no way. Watch me Google something very fast. Brad Pitt, that hot young actor who is in no way 56 years old. Vince probably thinks all the kids are watching Snatch now. So he basically got himself a Brad Pitt from Snatch. and he's got Sheamus in the hat, in the pork pie hat. I don't know if it's a pork pie. It's a trilby pork pie, whatever it is. It's not a bowler. I know that. And he's got the suspenders and the white beater and the taped hands and the slacks. So they interview him after this, and they hey, did you try and murder Big E because you lost at Payback? It's like nonsense. This man, he's supposed to had a periwinkle blue boys. He's just doing Sheamus in that outfit. I can't not hear the Brad Pitt voice from the movie Snatch. But uh, he he says, did I set him up? Why would I? No, this man needs to focus. He's not focused. This is a huge opportunity for him, this fatal four-way match. He wasn't focused. He wanted to see Big E. He wanted to see Xavier Woods, his friend. He's letting his friends drag him down again. And so I refocused him. Okay, fine. Oh, he's got major lacerations, I guess, on his back from being air raid crashed onto a... We can't see them because he's still laying on his back. He's wearing a red tracksuit, too, so you wouldn't be able to see the blood. Anyway, major lacerations and probably some other serious internal injuries. The local medical facility will figure all this stuff out. Remember how they said like a couple weeks ago that Drew McIntyre probably has a skull fracture and bleeding on the brain? He's probably dead. Drew McIntyre is probably dead now. No word yet what we're going to do with the title that he was holding, but Drew McIntyre, this reporter, says he's likely dead. No, he's got a hairline jaw fracture. So we'll see what Big E's major lacerations and serious internal injuries become, like, you know, bruised buttocks. Yeah. Anyway, so Sheamus seems to think now it's going to be a triple threat match. So Shayna and Nia won the tag titles at Payback. We know this. So Sasha and Bayley are getting a rematch on SmackDown. So brunette girl, who I've never seen before, she now they Bayley and Sasha are interviewed and they say, "Look, that we've got it covered. We had never wrestled. Nobody ever seen Nia and Shayna as a tag team before. Now we got them scouted. We know what we're going to do." And so, of course, the interviewer is programmed by Vince to ask leading questions to make people mad at her. And she's basically like, "Well, you tapped, Bayley. What? You tap all the time, Bayley. I don't know. I'm just saying you tap all the time." And Banks sticks up for her very vociferously. And they seem like they're in a very good place together as tag teammates. Put a pin in that. We're going to come back to it later. Speaking of coming back to later, I'm going to do this now before we get to the awesome angle they're going to run here. So Meltzer, old Melts, Davey M, who likes to observe wrestling, I hear, he's reporting that it's likely that Retribution will be a Raw-only act from here on out. So Retribution, who had their first real attack on SmackDown, is now a Raw-only act. Like, they've been on both brands. Now they're only going to be on Raw. The one time this company respects the brand split, of course, is the one time when it makes no fucking sense to do so. Why is Retribution only on Raw? Why? Tell me a reason, like, why kayfabe they would be. I don't know. I mean, it's because you don't want them to have to deal with the Roman Reigns thing? I mean, I understand. He's like, don't talk about fucking Juggernaut, and he's in charge now, and you can't. Like, they're doing a bunch of infighting over on Raw, like, who's really in charge here in the locker room? Who's going to band us all together to beat up these dudes in hoodies? Is what they're asking, I guess. But they're not going to be on SmackDown anymore, according to, you know, Davey Meltz, who likes to observe wrestling. I don't understand this. But I have to find this person to give them credit for it, because it's one of the funniest fucking things I've heard in a long, long time. Oh, come on, come on, come on. Where is it? 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 Oh. Oh, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Okay, so this guy, I'm trying to remember what it was. I want to make sure I'm not missing it. So anyway, I can't remember your name, who you tweeted this at me, but it's so friggin' funny. There it is. It's from good old Repo. Good old Repo. Bear Force One, WON, on Twitter. Do you know the old Cure song, Friday I'm in Love? So, sung to the tune of Friday I'm in Love by The Cure, this is the new theme song for Retribution. I don't care if Friday's blue, Wednesday's yellow, and Tuesday too. Thursday, I don't care about you, but Mondays, I hate Raw. That's so fucking clever. Bear Force One. So proud of you. That's a great fucking joke. That's a great fucking joke. Why would they only want to tear down WWE on Mondays? Why are they retributing against only Mondays? Why don't they care about the other days of the week? That's weird, right? I mean, not as weird as Vince McMahon saying that he owns all of your names and you're not allowed to have Twitch or Cameo anymore. I mean, come on. Either they're independent contractors or they're employees. Even if they are employees, you telling them what they can do on their own fucking time at home is bullshit. But if they're independent contractors, fuck you. You won't even give us fucking health insurance? Fuck you. I need to make more money to pay for my goddamn health insurance. Fuck you. I hope everybody in WWE gives old Vince the old fuck you. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. So, Kayla's talking to Adam Pearce again, who is the de facto general manager of both Raw and SmackDown now. They're trying to figure out who's going to replace Big E in the Fatal 4-Way. So Paul Heyman walks up and says, hey, can you come here for a second? I got something to talk about. So later it's announced that they've replaced Big E with Jey Uso. So we'll talk more about that in a bit. First, this women's tag team titles match. Sasha Banks and Bayley. Sasha and Bayley work so well together in this match for most of it. So well together. Nia Jax and Shayna are like two separate entities who are, it's like each of them is fighting a 2-on-1 handicap match whenever they are in the ring by themselves. And they're winning them, both handicap matches. But it never feels like that Shayna and Nia are a team together up against another team. It feels like each woman is in the ring alone by herself and occasionally will tag out to get a rest. That's what it feels like watching the whole thing. I don't think this tag team is long for existence. I think that Nia and Shayna, they're not doing stuff together, really. I mean, not really in the match. It's just like one of them is in there fighting the other tag team, but then they tag out occasionally and then get in there. But it's not like it's like, hey, you work her over, then bring her over and tag me, and then I'll work her over. And like that doesn't, I don't feel like that's something I watched. Maybe I missed it. I will say I did love how they got Nia to take her nap on the outside, because Nia's got to take a nap at some point during. Nia gets tuckered out about halfway through a tag match, and she's got to take a little nappy nap on the outside. get a little shut eye, hit the hay. Naya Tai Tai. Naya Tai Tai needed to take a nap. So she gets sunset flip powerbombed by Sasha Banks onto the outside, but with the help of Bayley. Thought it was great. And then she's out for like most of the rest of the match. And it's just Shayna versus Bayley and Sasha. And I thought this whole sequence was really great. Shayna works so well with each of these ladies. And I'm very into it. This looks really, really great. Eventually, Naya gets in and is able to... well, when Shayna's in there, this is the big angle. Sasha runs on the apron to hit the double knees in the corner to Shayna, who's on the apron but leaning against the ring post, if that makes sense. And then she runs and she hits the double knees in the ring post because Shayna rolls out of the way. So she sells it as though she's broken both of her kneecaps. Does a great job selling it. And sells it throughout the rest of the match. And she can barely stand, and Bailey's helping her. Bailey and her are both in the ring trying to ward off Shayna for a bit. But Naya is the legal woman. Naya climbs up to the top and does a crossbody and squishes both Bailey and Sasha and gets the pinfall on both of them, which I thought was a nice touch because it's not the angle you're about to see is not you got pinned and I didn't and I'm angry at you. You know, that's not what this angle is. We'll figure out more so what it is, but that's not what it is right now. I know what I hope it is, but they're not going to do it. So after the match, Sasha's really hurt. She's really selling the legs thing. And they go to commercial and they come back and there's like EMTs, not training staff, EMTs in the ring. And they're trying to help her and help her get up. And she doesn't want their help, doesn't want their help. She ends up shoving one of the guys away. And Bailey's like, get out of here. Get out. I'll look after her. Okay. And so Sasha lets Bailey help her up. And they're trying to get her. It's like, do you want to stand? Do you want to just roll out? What do you want to do? And this was all really sweet and a really cool way of showing that they, you know, love each other. Just kidding. Ding dong. Who's there? It's me, Bailey. I'm a heel. She kicks Sasha while she's down, throws her into the steel steps, just beats her up, hits her with a couple of vicious knees, and then eventually Sasha tries to fight her off a couple times very valiantly, but they keep saying Bailey snapped, and then she pilmanizes. She was going to do Sasha's leg, but Sasha fought her off, so she's like, fine. Hits her with a crazy running knee and then pilmanizes her fucking head. And she's just got this horrible look of glee on her face. Question. This heel, Bailey, this one that they're going to get into, it's darker than, like, you know, I'm a heel because I have a mom haircut now. And I wear my belt like a bandolier. I had a weird psychological idea about Bailey a while back. This was when she literally was entering every time with the belt like a bandolier, like around torso with the thing in front. And it was like she was being hugged by it. Because Bailey's a hugger, right? But she's not allowed to hug anymore because she's evil, but she still misses that sensation. That sensation of being hugged, which is why she wears the belt like that. But she'll never be able to admit that to herself and doesn't even know that's really why she's doing it. It's just, you know, a very overly deep reading of the way she's wearing the belt. We don't know yet why she decided to try and ruin Banks's career. Because later, after they do, she's a pilmanizing thing. Like, they get in the ring, and Sasha does such a great job of selling the chair attack thing too. Like, she's got one hand here that you can see, and everything else is like covered by the chair, but the one hat that really one hand is shivering, not twitching, but because that'd be too much. But she's like, it's wavering. You know what I mean? It's very good. It's really well done. I hope that that Bailey Bailey blames Sasha for Bailey being bad, because I think that would be really interesting. Like, that Sasha's bad influence caused her to forget who she is, and she can't remember who she was. You know, like, the Bailey we all knew and loved in NXT, the one who beat Sasha 5 years ago at TakeOver Brooklyn 1 in that greatest women's match in the history of wrestling, in my opinion, that I've ever seen. And because of all the story that was there, and the drama, and the how badly you wanted one person to win, and then that actually coming true, and the catharsis of that victory. That Bailey, we had to give up on her. We couldn't do that anymore. Bailey chose her friend Sasha, who was evil, over being the good and sweet Bailey that she always had been. And that choosing darkness changed her. And she can't ever go back to what she was. And she wishes that she could, but she can't. And it's all Sasha's fault. That's way too deep, and they're never going to do it. But think about the spectrum of what babyface Bailey was to what now. I'm going to murder my best friend for whatever reason. Heel Bailey is. And the spectrum that you have in between, where for a while she was like, I'm annoying and you don't like me, but I'm still a heel, but you love to watch me be a heel because I'm funny. That heel, like, the spectrum that she was able to work in. Like, I don't know. You know, like, they wanted to make Becky Lynch into a heel. We never really got to see her be a heel. The fans wouldn't let it happen. I don't know how they would have gone along with it. I don't know what it would have been. Charlotte? Fuck. There's no chance. Charlotte can never be a babyface. It doesn't work. She doesn't have it in her. It's not possible. She's got too much baggage as a heel. Even when we know we're supposed to root for her, we're like, well, I respect your acumen as an in-ring performer. And it's true. Like, everybody does. She's great. She's probably the best ever. Could be. Maybe. One of the best. But never believable as a babyface. Bailey. I mean, even Sasha. When she's a babyface, it's like we're always waiting for her to become like, it's boss time again. I don't think we're ever going to get side pony Bailey. Like, even without the hair. But like, that kind of baby face, I don't think that's ever going to come back again. But if it ever does, I totally believe in Bailey to be able to do that. Of the four horsewomen who are being pushed constantly by this company as the greatest four women wrestlers ever, of those four, Bailey is the one who can do that range. She's the one. I think Sasha is the closest to come to that. And we'll see, because they're definitely making Sasha the babyface in this feud now. So we will see how much we can. But even babyface Sasha is like sassy, and we like rooting for her, but she's still like not a nice person, but we still like rooting for her because she's great in the ring and she's fun and everything, but she's not like Nobody, there's nobody that can do that now. Like, Becky even was like a badass, but not like good. You know, she's a badass. And we like watching her. We like rooting for her, but she was never good. Bayley went from absolute, like 100% good to 100% evil in the past, what, year and a half? That's tough to do. Bravo to Bayley. Bravo to Sasha, the way she sold everything. Can't wait to see where this goes from here. They finally fucking pulled the trigger. Now you have to give us Sasha versus Bayley again. Is this happening at Clash of Champions? It sure look Night of Champions. Clash of Champions? Clyde of Champions. Nash of Champions. Is it happening at Nash of Champions? I don't know that it's happening at Nash of Champions, because I think that they're giving Sasha some time off to recuperate from having, you know, her neck broke or whatever the fuck they're going to say. Sasha Bayley is now just ahead. Sasha Bayley. Sasha Banks is now just a head in a jar. We had to amputate her torso and all four of her limbs. This just in. It looks like Sasha Banks has a cold. She has a cold, and we're going to give her some chicken noodle soup, and she's going to be fine. Stop telling us people are dying, and then come back a couple of days later and be like, oh, well, no, it wasn't actually dying. I can't wait for this fucking Sasha versus Bayley. It's TakeOver Brooklyn 2 for them, but with the roles reversed, with Sasha as the heel. Well, sorry, with Sasha as the babyface and Bayley as the heel. I can't wait. That's going to be so great. So great! Sami Zayn, who has not shaved and not gotten a haircut since March, he looks like he's the front man of a Phish cover band. It's great. But he... he's really upset because Greg Hamilton doesn't announce him when he comes down to the ring, Intercontinental Champion. But Greg Hamilton says it wasn't on my notes. I says, well, who's producing this shit? He doesn't say shit. Who's producing this show? He yells into the headset, next time, we're going to do this all over again, and you put Intercontinental Champion on my graphic. But Jeff Hardy comes down. If you wanted a title shot, all you got to do is ask. Sammy's like, that's not your title. I'm still the champion, which I do like as a thing that Sammy is doing, because it does feel like Sami Zayn, the actual person, not the character, doesn't love how somebody told him, no questions asked. If you feel like it's unsafe to perform, to do shows during COVID, no questions asked. You can stay home. And he says, great, I'm staying home. And they're like, fantastic. We're shipping you for the Intercontinental title. but anyway, I think he's legitimately pissed, and he should be. Anyway, AJ comes out, and Jeff's like, hey, if you're clear, AJ, I'll have a match with you too. And Sammy's like, that's not how this works. You can't have a title match with him. I am the champion. And AJ punches Jeff, and Jeff fights off AJ, and Sammy hits Jeff with a Kaluva kick, and we're now at a stalemate. So, at Clyde of Champions? Nash of Champions. At Nash of Champions, we're going to have Sammy versus Jeff versus AJ. I'm almost sure of it. They haven't announced it yet, but I'm almost sure of it. Ooh. Generic cream soda playing tricks on my taste buds. So, now they, this is so funny. They, it's so weird. They announce that Jay is going to be in this title match, right? in this in number one contenders Fatal Four Way. They announced that Matt Riddle comes out first, alleged rapist Matt Riddle comes out first. We go to commercial. Back from the break. There's some mystery woman they're showing with a vignette. Some woman wearing in high heels. We never see who it is. It's either a slight repackaging of Lacey Evans as a woman who likes fur coats, or it's Vanessa Bourne. Those are the only two options in my mind of who it could possibly be. It's weird. It's a very odd little teaser. And then they do the heavy machinery lunchbox bullshit. Now we go to Jey Uso. Walks into Roman Reigns' thing, say, "Hey, thank you for pulling some strings. Get me the main event. I owe big time." And Rey says, "Like, listen, it's time that they showed you some respect. You deserve it." He says, "I'm gonna go win this match, and then it's you and me at Nash of Champions." Roman's like, "Listen, I know Jimmy would win it, so you go prove that you're good as your brother." Baron Corbin is now, we go back to the ring, and Matt Riddle's still there with his music still playing 10 minutes later, and Corbin is being carried out by these four stooges on his little throne thing, and then this isn't nepotism. Jey Uso shouldn't even be in this match. Also, Matt Riddle, you're a loser. And Matt Riddle runs out, and he starts fighting with Baron Corbin up at the top of the ramp, down toward the ring. We go to another commercial. We come back from the commercial. We still haven't started that match yet. Now it's Firefly Funhouse time, where Bray Wyatt is really upset about having lost his title, but he blames Braun, I think, more for, he's very upset because the Fiend lost his favorite toy. But next week on the Firefly Funhouse, a brand new friend will be here. And then we cut immediately to Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss, kind of sort of making up, with Alexa Bliss being a little bit crazier than she was last week. So it's heavily implied that Alexa Bliss will be the one who's in the funhouse, but I don't expect they're going to do that. It'll be another puppet. Maybe it'll be a puppet that looks like Alexa Bliss. An Alexa Bliss puppet, perhaps. Not sure. But then we go back into the ring, and now we're finally starting this four-way match. They introduced Matt Riddle to come down to the ring to start the match, went to commercial, did a backstage segment with Miz and Morrison and Heavy Machinery, did a backstage segment with Jey Uso, who's casually talking to Roman Reigns as if he's not supposed to be in a match that's starting, like, you know, in 20 seconds. But he knows that they're going to go to commercial again, come back, do a Firefly Funhouse, talk to Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss, then go back to the ring. So finally, Jey Uso's there, and also Baron Corbin got in a brawl with Matt Riddle somewhere along there. That's a weird way to, like, do your main event. At 8:30, well, I'm in Central Time, so 9:30, a half hour before the show ends, you bring out the first combatant in the Fatal Four Way. Then you do all this other shit, bring out the second combatant in the Fatal Four Way. The first two combatants start a brawl, go to commercial again, back from the commercial, do a whole bunch more shit, then back to the ring, then we start the match. All you need to know about the match is that Jey looks great in it. Matt Riddle gets to shine. Sheamus and Corbin do their best to ruin everything because they are Sheamus and Corbin. Sheamus and Corbin team up to toss Jey Uso over the barricade and then over the front row of flat screens. And Michael Cole absolutely says, "Well, that's it for Jey Uso. He can't possibly get back in the match now." And they're like, "Oh, so Jey Uso is winning this thing." You don't have to telegraph it that much, guys. Riddle avoids End of Days, and then Sheamus hits a bro kick on Corbin. Riddle hits a bro to sleep on Sheamus. Then Riddle hits the floating bro on Corbin. But that just as he hits the floating bro off the top rope, Jay hits his big splash off the top out of nowhere. Remember how I said how much I hated Kevin Dunn on Monday? Because he never gets the right shot. That was the right shot. We did not see Jey Uso between the time he got tossed over the front row of flat screens until he came off the top rope to win the match. We didn't see him at all. And that helps us with our, you know, not it's a surprise. We like a surprise. So Uso hits a giant Uso splash on Riddle, gets the pinfall on Riddle to become number one contender. It's Jay Uso versus Roman Reigns, cousin versus cousin. And Kayla asks how important this victory is for him. What a dumb question, Kayla. He's competing for the Universal Championship. I don't think he's ever held a singles title before, much less the top title of the whole company. That's a weird thing to ask. It's like, I'm making the family proud too, big dog. It's lockdown. Welcome to the Uso Penitentiary. He doesn't actually say to the Uso Penitentiary. He says, you know the rest. So I don't know if they're not allowed to say that line anymore, and they just forgot. For whatever reason. but he says, this is for you, Jimmy, because Jimmy's at home injured. I don't know for how much longer. Not sure. Be interesting to know. Because here's what I want at Clash of Champions. I want Finger Poke of Doom 2. That's what I want. I guess it wouldn't be Finger Poke of Doom 2 because it wasn't. What a perfect time to do Finger Poke of Doom 2 at Nash of Champions, since it was Kevin Nash who was the first involved in the first Finger Poke of Doom. That was where it was a big payoff angle. NWO White versus NWO Red. Kevin Nash, who I believe was the champion at the time, versus Hulk Hogan. And Hulk Hogan poked Kevin Nash in the chest. And Kevin Nash went down like a sack of dirt and just flopped onto the ground. And Hogan covered him for the 1-2-3. That was it. And it was because he threw the title back to Hogan so the NWO could reform as one. So that was, God, Jesus, what, 20 years ago, something like that? I need Roman to retain by finger poking Jey Uso. And then they or something like that. Like, it's the whole thing's a giant work and we're not actually watching a real match. Jey Uso throws the match to Roman because Roman has appointed Jey Uso and his brother Jimmy and Naomi as his new faction. And they are the Samoan SWAT team. And they get a ride high forever as heels. It's going to be hard to do Naomi as a heel, but I think they can make it work. Just a total badass. Like, she was a badass back in Team Bad. Beautiful and dangerous. Dominant? I don't know what the hell they were. But I love the idea of Roman with the Usos backing him up, beating people to death. And then down the road, while Big E is trying to become Universal Champion and the Usos are now tag champs, having taken them off of Heavy Machinery, who took them off of Cesaro and Shinsuke. So the Usos are champions. Roman Reigns is champion. And we get, for all the marbles, All the gold is on the line. Roman Reigns and the Usos versus the New Day. That's what I want. They're never going to do it. Here's what they're going to do to further Roman Reigns as a heel, because I guess they probably don't think we buy it yet. No, we buy it. But at Nash of Champions, it's going to be Roman Reigns just trying to murder his own cousin. Just being terrible to him. Oh, God. Well, if he would do this to his own cousin, what's it going to do to somebody else? But no, I really desperately hope that somehow they form a faction. Roman Reigns and the Usos as heels against the New Day is such a great six-man tag feud. Please make it happen. Please, 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 please. Anyway, I'm allowed to be optimistic, even though, you know, it never works out for me. So yeah, that was SmackDown, which didn't suck. The things that were great were so good, I didn't mind the things that did suck. I don't love that Big E is stuck feuding with Sheamus instead of actually getting a chance to be pushed. Because feuding with Sheamus is not a push. It's a treading water at best. Anyway, I'm not going to dwell on it because it didn't matter. What mattered is we got an amazing Bayley. Can you be a heel and turn heel? Because if so, Bayley fucking did. And then we got this Jey Uso and Roman deal I'm totally in the bag for and can't wait to be disappointed by what they decided to do. So that was Sour Graps. This is my merch. You should buy my merch. It's a shop.fightful.com. It's a Sour Graps shirt. If you like the Sour Graps show, go to shop.fightful.com and purchase a t-shirt. Then everyone can say, hey, what's that? And you can say, hey, it's this podcast I listen to. Or watch. Or both. I have been Alex Pawlowski. Thank you for watching. Love all of you. Let's all hope together that we'll get the Usos and Roman running roughshod over everybody as heels. Won't that be fun? Because I know normally I say that everything sucks. And in this case, I just can't say it. So I'll say, not everything sucks.